It's the Pacific Rim Pro Wrestling Podcast, the podcast that takes you from Seattle to Tokyo at all points throughout history. From the Seattle area, it's Jim Valley, longtime broadcaster and wrestling fan. And we head across the Pacific Ocean, the Pacific Rim, to Tokyo, Japan, and Japan's leading author, historian, and all-around good guy, my friend, Fumi Saito. How are you, man?
Hello, how are you?
Good. It's been a little while.
It seems that way.
Yep. Sorry, I had to have a birthday, so we went away for my birthday. So.
Oh, I sent you birthday message.
You're almost always the first one, but now I have other friends in Japan who send me greetings.
Ah,
that's so awesome. Actually, real quick, because we got a ton of stuff to cover today, a million things.
Yes.
Thank you to everybody for all of the birthday wishes. And one of the cool things about social media and about being on the Observer site is all of these people from all around the world wishing you a happy birthday. It was so awesome to get birthday wishes in Japanese and translated from other languages. And it was really cool. It was really heartwarming. So I loved that. That was literally one of the best parts of my birthday.
Oh, okay.
So I think that was awesome.
They had to translate. That's also social media.
Yeah, it was just cool, though. It's cool.
Translation that, button, huh?
It may not be accurate. All but, over that said no. So that's awesome. So I love
it. Yeah, yeah. Well, 2019.
Yeah. Speaking of 2019, we've got a ton of Japanese news to cover, but before we do that, Raw has just wrapped up, and you wanted to talk about something. You said you're more excited.
Oh, just a few seconds, yeah.
Yeah, that you're more excited about Raw than you've been in a
long time. For the first
time
in quite some time.
Yeah.
Yeah, this AJ Styles heel turn. If it's first fingerprint of Paul Heyman, it's a good sign, you know?
Yeah, it's hard to say.
Yeah.
They obviously, you know, I was at the Raw last week where Ricochet and AJ wrestled the first time, mm-hmm. and I thought there was going to be a heel turn then.
Right. Milking time, I think.
Yeah, and that's good that they did that.
Yeah, because it takes quite some time, like 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 5 week build up, a lot better than, bait and switch, you know? Your turn, somebody like AJ Styles, basically very first time he's doing heel. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So this has to be exciting and it has to mean something. And AJ Styles happened to be one of the very believable babyface in this wrestling world today, right?
Well, and I think a couple of things. One, they need heels badly.
Instead of the Drew McIntyre and, yeah.
They need a top heel.
Best in the world thing.
They need that really badly. A fresh top heel that everybody hasn't beaten, like Drew McIntyre has been beaten like a drum.
And the other
thing I think that's good is that Gallows and Anderson can now stooge and protect AJ Styles.
So underutilized. Good workers with no programs forever.
And now that AJ is older, he signed with the company. So it's like they have no fear of him going anywhere else. So maybe they can put some faith in AJ and really put some steam and heat on him.
Yeah, but that's the political part that people don't need to know. Or we don't need to know that if program and TV show is exciting, we'll watch it. It's a good show. Go ahead.
What I'm saying is those politics, though, are out of the way, and they now can make for an exciting show because the company has faith in AJ behind the scenes. So now in front of the camera, you can do all kinds of exciting things is what I'm saying.
And also after watching this, you know, a very exciting finish day, what Ricochet did at the end of the match, that the way they go into the 1-2-3, you know, pinning predicament, that it was very new, fresh finish for one thing, and also AJ Styles will be the person who will elevate Ricochet into another level this time. This feud isn't over, just the beginning. That there will be, I'm pretty sure that we will be watching AJ Styles against Ricochet for another 3 to 6 months. You know what I'm saying?
That can
be a very important match for the important event like SummerSlam or Survivor Series and stuff like that.
Yeah, and they can feud probably into the fall, I hope.
Yeah, then, yeah, this can be a year-long feud, you know? It will elevate Ricochet to another level.
Not just
a high-flying guy.
I would like to see them have the discipline to hold off and do AJ versus Roman or AJ versus Seth.
That's down the line. You know, yes. Right now, that immediately he will elevate Ricochet to a very main event status.
And a nice, long, satisfying heel run
to go off the air. The AJ Styles gave, you know, the camera a very heelish smile for the first time. So this turn will be good, I think.
It's exactly what he needed.
Yeah, I mean, he had this cynical, I mean, really heelish smile right onto camera. The, you know, show go off the air. It was perfect. When they do perfect thing, WWF can do perfect angle, you know? So that's what we just saw tonight. But yeah, we got a lot of ground to cover here tonight.
How big were AJ and those guys, Gallows and Anderson, when they were in the Bullet Club? How big was that for New Japan, and how great were they?
Obviously AJ Styles was given IWGP title, you know, right off the bat, and he was championship, you know, material, and the matches were always good, and his size wasn't considered small in Japan, you know, and Gallows and Carl Anderson, yes, you know, good wrestlers, good worker type, but always needed something, so that Bullet Club helped, you know, and this is going to be very good for three of them, I think.
Speaking of the Bullet Club, WWE ran Sumo Palace in Ryogoku.
Yeah.
You went both nights.
Yeah, both nights. Yeah. Friday night and Saturday night. It's really amazing that the day left Japan Sunday morning and won't get there till Monday afternoon. And then they were in Dallas and doing Monday Night Raw. You know, world tour, right?
What a grind.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's just like, yeah, come to think of it. Those guys, the Monday Night Raw, Ricochet, AJ Styles, you know, Gallows and Anderson, Drew McIntyre, Baron Corbin, Bobby Lashley, Samoa Joe, they were all in Japan all weekend, Friday night and Saturday night. They couldn't leave Saturday night. They left Japan Sunday morning, and the plane won't get there and get back to the States until Monday afternoon.
So you said the crowds were good both nights.
Yes, yes. And not quite 11,000 people, but WWE basically never does freebies, you know. So these were a legitimate crowd, you know. Both nights, like some 8,000-ish, yeah.
Do they set up stage? How big is the setup there?
Not quite stage, but it was the entrance, you know. And house show setup, not a Monday Night Raw, your ramp entrance. You know what I'm saying? So it was house show setup. Although they had screen and entrance and the curtain and all that and lighting and music, but not quite TV settings, you know? Yeah.
What kind of fans were there that night? WWE fans? WWE Universe.
It's amazing that I'd say 80% of these Japanese audience at the Sumo Palace that night was your Japanese WWE Universe, you know, that the portion of wrestling fan, WWE Universe in Japan, it's really amazing. They only follow WWE. And maybe not even half these people, you know, watch other wrestling, you know. Much like New Japan World. New Japan fans, I call it New Japan World, they don't watch other wrestling, including WWE, let alone Old Japan or Pro Wrestling Noah or Big Japan or Dragon Gate, you know, all those things. You know, we have many, many companies, but New Japan fans follow New Japan Wrestling, and there are WWE Universe that similar, closer to more concert gore and movie gore, or the like concert gore, meaning like when the big act from America comes, they go watch, you know, concerts. The WWE audience in Japan are very similar to that type of audience. And they, of course, they study, you know, their talents, you know, they pop for pretty much everything, you know. Yeah.
So let's talk about some of the matches. I guess the first
Yeah,
night.
what was well basically house show though, just like you happen to be in Tokyo, you could be in Portland, Oregon, you could be in Seattle, Washington, you could be in Hawaii or Shanghai or Singapore for that matter, right? And what they did special for this Japanese tour was that the special appearance for Triple H tonight. He worked matches tonight. And I you and I pretty much talked about it. And, you know, I thought Triple H was on the tour to have a single match against Shinsuke Nakamura and put him over. That's what I assumed. But it wasn't. It was more like Triple H teaming up with AJ Styles, Luke Gallows, and Carl Anderson against Drew McIntyre and Baron Corbin, Bobby Lashley, and Samoa Joe. Eight-man tag team situation first night. Of course, Big Babyface go over. The second night, Triple H made tag team with Shinsuke Nakamura for the first time and went against Robert Roode and Samoa Joe. And Triple H did the come on and, you know, all these, you know, vibration thing. And Triple H went along with all this Nakamura's routine, you know. Of course, made him big baby face, you know. And the finish was, of course, Nakamura's Kinshasa, but they made sure that they threw in Triple H's pedigree and all the signature move in between, you know. And believe it or not, some of these crowd were actually crying, you know, to see Triple H. Because they hinted and teased a little bit that this might be the last time that Triple H will actually be in the ring as an active wrestler. This might be his last tour, you know, so they teased it. So it was very special to have Triple H as a wrestler in there. Does that make sense?
What makes Triple H so popular special in Japan?
Well, because all through, you know, 2000s, you know, he was the tour, you know. You remember 1994, you know, that Mania tour, which was separate from these tours, you know, WWE tour. 2002 was the year WWE actually started this regular once a year tour, you know, annual tours, you know. And the first tour, 2002, was, of course, there was Triple H, but the focal point was The Rock against Chris Jericho at the time. But since then, 2002, 3, 4, 5, all the way to this year, like, you have 18 years of it. That Triple H was pretty much in it almost every tour. Not last 5-6 years, but, you know, he was the star of the tour most of the time. There were Kurt Angle, you know, tour. There was CM Punk tour. And, of course, there was the Shield tour. And, yeah, all these current superstars was on the top of the card, just like your house shows, you know, program. But for some reason, Triple H made sure that he was close to Japanese audience. And a couple times he came to Japan, not for the tour, but for the promotions, you know, like concert promotion or movie promotion type. He came in for a few days just to do press interviews and photos and greetings. And the Triple H, I think, is very much like your, more like a Ric Flair type in Japan. How's that?
Did he got over with AJ and the OG Bullet Club?
Yeah, the way they came in. Well, AJ Styles, Carl Anderson, and Luke Gallows, they treated like a trio. But Triple H had separate entrance. You know, he does his signature entrance with water bottle and walk around ring and got on the apron and used his, you know, he doesn't have hair anymore, but the water all over his head, and then they put, you know, water in his mouth, and he just the whole Triple H thing. And they, Japanese fan, love this thing, you know.
Any and other also, interesting matches, or matchups, or reactions on the show?
It's a house show, basically, okay, and running two house shows with same faces two nights in a row, so you gotta switch car, you know, lineups around a little bit. But at the same time, they did Ricochet against Cesaro twice, you know, first night, second night, same matchup, but different content. They did that kind of things. And Seth Rollins, of course, the first night in the main event was Seth Rollins against Shinsuke Nakamura's Universal title match. They treated it like that, this is the match you can't miss kind of thing. And Becky Lynch against Alexa Bliss, they treated it like a special. Just some of these fans will attend just one night, either Friday night or Saturday night. And a lot of fans will attend both nights. And that it has to be, you know, able to work in both audiences, you know. And I went both nights and I saw, you know, differences in, you know, in both, you know, first night and second night. They meant to do like almost like a sequel the second night. It's okay if you didn't attend the first night. You can still watch the, you know, second night. But if you attended the first night, it will mean more second night. Like, your Kabuki Warrior, you know, Asuka and Kairi Sane and iconic little teeny program two nights in a row and things and stuff like that. Does it make sense?
Is the crowd upset that maybe the level of wrestling is house show level versus, say, like a New Japan level?
To be honest with you, actually, these are not that kind of wrestling fan. I don't think they really, they watch matches and enjoy matches, but they don't look at wrestling matches the way probably you and I, does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes perfect sense.
They want to watch WWE Universe in Japan, though. I'm talking about strictly about WWE Universe in Japan, that they want to watch something that you would be watching on WWE Network. Or, you know, these are the stars they wanted to watch. I wouldn't say that the content and the quality of matches are secondary or anything like that. You know, the good matches are good matches, bad matches are bad matches. But I don't think, that's so hard to put it, but I don't think they have very good eyes for the details of that match, like your veteran wrestling fans, if you are, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
Yeah, like the eyes they have a little bit more casual, or they were there to enjoy, so they're not their own critics. How's that?
Sure.
Yeah. So it's different. You're completely dealing with different audience, you know? And what's interesting is that the Ricochet who worked in front of New Japan, you know, fans, the Ricochet who worked in front of WWE Universe in Japan, it's like you will be two different wrestlers, you know. Of course, good portion of, you know, fans at the building, you know, they've seen Ricochet in New Japan ring and, you know, Ricochet in WWE ring this time. But you expect Ricochet to be WWE package this time. How's that?
What about the Kabuki Warriors? How were they received?
Completely 100% WWE, you know, WWE superstar. That's it. They've read about it, probably seen in the magazine, or they've read a few things on the internet. But Asuka, they see as Asuka is 100% WWE superstar. That Kairi Sane, they see as Kairi Sane is 100% WWE. That the superstar that came from Japan, you know. I'm not sure these people really followed Kairi Sane in Stardom days, you know. I kind of doubt it, you know. Good numbers are, though, they followed, but your majority WWE Universe in Japan, they did not really see Stardom version of Kairi Sane in live action, I don't think.
So is Triple H the most popular on the shows both nights?
Shinsuke Nakamura. Yeah. Shinsuke Nakamura was the most popular. And Seth Rollins. Seth Rollins is the main guy on television, you know? And the superstar. Superstar live in front of you. So it's like WWE is being WWE, even in Japan.
All right. Well, why don't we talk about
Am I making any sense there?
You always make sense every time. Okay. I don't know why you ask me that.
Yeah, because I get this silent treatment from you.
I don't have to react to everything. I don't think people on the podcast need to hear me or want to hear me say,
no, actually, this is like on the phone with, you know, it's like there's like a couple seconds pause delay almost on the phone.
I know. That's why sometimes we talk over each other. But I think I try to keep in mind, just so you know, for the sake of the listener, it's like, I don't think they need to hear me go, yes, no,
All right. But I'm generally almost always in agreement with you. That was my experience. Yes. You know, two nights, Friday night, you spend the night at Sumo Palace watching WWE Live first night, and then went back and went home, slept, you know, and spent the day doing, you know, minding my own business. Then Saturday night comes and leave home, then go to Sumo Palace again, then attend second night of WWE Live. And so it was a two nights of thing. Like I spent whole weekend watching WWE Live or something.
Well, look at that. Yeah? We've watched a lot of WWE, you and I, lately.
I guess. And I just finished watching WWE on television live, Raw, from America. It's my Tuesday morning, you know.
So let's talk about the G1.
G1, yes, this is very important this time, yes.
What do you think is so important about this year's G1?
Well, this year's G1, but I got that question on Twitter that why G1 Climax, you know, itself is so important in Japan.
Yes.
This year's G1 Climax is pretty important too, but why G1 so big in Japan was the question I got on the Twitter.
Hashtag ask Fumi. Yes, someone asked that question.
Right. Well, this G1 Climax thing goes back to 1991 for the first, you know, very first, you know, inaugural G1 Climax mini round robin tournament, you know, thing. It started 1991. Okay. It actually replaced New Japan's spring tournament. If you go back to Japanese wrestling history lesson, you know, Ricky Dozan's Nippon Pro Wrestling or Giant Baba's All Japan Pro Wrestling Champion Carnival, it still goes, you know, to this date. And Inoki's the New Japan Pro Wrestling had a World League, Madison Square Garden Series, and IWGP Tournament before IWGP was heavyweight title. You know, every April or May, you know, every spring there was serious singles tournament as a Japanese wrestling tradition. And G1 Climax actually replaced New Japan's single match tournament. They changed tradition. It was 1991, G1 Climax, but the previous year, 1990, they did the prototype of this kind of summer running, you know, consecutive nights wrestling at the same building kind of thing. That one previous year, 1990, New Japan new booker then Riki Choshu tried 7 consecutive dates at the Korakuen Hall. 7 consecutive dates. Can you imagine?
And so people know Korakuen is about 1600 seats.
It's 1700. Yeah,
1700 seats.
Yeah, but the trying that building 7 days in a row, you know, it's like, what are you going to do to, you know, to have people keep coming back for 7 straight nights, you know? So they did the interesting matchup of all the single matches. That became the idea of next year's G1 Climax tournament. You know, it really replaced the single match tournament idea. So they did not do the 7 consecutive Korakuen dates anymore. Instead, 1991, very first G1 Climax, they did 3 nights at the Sumo Palace, 3 nights in a row. That's pretty big too. 3 consecutive nights at the, you know, Sumo Palace. And there were, you know, Riki Choshu, Bam Bam Bigelow, Scott Norton, Vader, Muto, Fujinami, Choshu, Hashimoto, those 8 people in 2 blocks, you know, just like brackets we have now. You know, A division and B division, right? And since then, G1 Climax served as the tournament that to create new star or the meaningful, you know, single matchups. You know, first G1 Climax in 1991, everybody, pretty much including myself, assumed it was going to be Keiji Muto's reign. You know what I'm saying? That up until then, see, we have to go back a couple years now, because why did Riki Choshu take over as a booker? 1989, 2 years before that, right? 1989, Inoki went, you know, ran for the public office for the first time. He won the election in summer of 89, okay? He became a real politician, House of Representatives. As of January 1990, Inoki left wrestling, okay? Inoki left wrestling for the first time and gave Riki Choshu his position as, well, in wrestling term, booker. Producer or like a manager in baseball term. We call it Genba Kantoku, you know. They had to reveal a little bit of wrestling method, I mean, like how wrestling works. When Inoki's days, he was a wrestler, top star, and he was a producer, he was a promoter, he was a director, and he was a writer, and he was everything, right? That when Inoki physically left New Japan Pro Wrestling, they really needed the booker to run the dressing room. Agree?
Of course.
Yeah. And Inoki gave Riki Choshu executive producer booker position, then left the company. And 1990 was the first year that booker Riki Choshu ran business. Then he did a lot of experiment. In 91, summer of 91, he came up with the idea of G1 Climax. And interestingly enough, Riki Choshu himself lost every single, you know, single match at this tournament. He did not win one match. Interesting, huh?
Why was that?
To not be a selfish, you know, selfish booker. And also he gave everybody, including dressing room and all the wrestlers, he is not a selfish booker. He is a creative person, and he will be creating new style and new storyline. And yeah, it was a very interesting booking that Choshu came up with, you know, because it's easy for booker to put yourself over, right?
Especially in the United States.
Yeah. This season, Riki Choshu's, you know, philosophy, very first inaugural G1 Climax that everybody's so excited. Three consecutive nights at the Sumo Palace. And just like I said, Muto, Chono, Hashimoto, and Fujinami, and Choshu, and Vader, Bam Bam Bigelow, and Scott Norton. These are eight top people, okay, in New Japan at the time. They're all going against each other in single match in 3 nights. And no, you know, Joe Blobuka will put yourself over probably, but Riki Choshu that year, very first G1 Climax, he chose to lose every single match, you know, tournament match. And still, a lot of people, including myself, assumed it was going to be Keiji Muto. Instead, Riki Choshu put Masa Chono over as a tournament winner. That established Masa Chono as top guy. See, when we had this, you know, at the very end of Inoki era, end of 1980 into 1990s, Keiji Muto, Masa Chono, and Shinya Hashimoto, three musketeers, you know, everybody knew these three were, you know, they were going to be the top star of New Japan. Muto, no doubt about it, everybody knew. And Hashimoto, more believable, kicking and more MMA-ish, you know, like more work shoot style guy. And Masa Chono was smart wrestler, worker, but lacking something at the time. He had to win this tournament to establish himself there. I mean, company did. And sure enough, second year, 1992 G1 Climax, Masa Chono won again. At the time, it was NWA World Heavyweight Championship Tournament. It was the WCW and New Japan had business at the time. 1992, it was the then vacant NWA World Heavyweight title match, you know, like the championship tournament to determine your NWA World Heavyweight Champion. You know, they had Rick Rude, they had, WCW wrestlers like Jim Neidhart, the Terry Taylor, the Barry Windham, the Arn Anderson, even Steve Austin was in it. And they had the tournament, and tournament final, Masa Chono beat Rick Rude to become and then vacant NWA World Heavyweight Champion, and had this Ric Flair design gold belt. So it established Masa Chono was a winner of two consecutive years. People see him as very top guy now. Believe it? What do you think?
Was that the right thing to do in hindsight?
Yeah. Then the Three Musketeers was real, you know? The Muto, Chono, and Hashimoto, three top new top guys, all equal. Just picture, like, you have Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose and Roman Reigns, each, you know, became single wrestler, you know, then becoming single top, the championship guys, you know, I mean, like a champion guys. So they are all single, you know, individual main event guys. That's how G1 Climax started. Every summer, new star were created, and new drama, not in the negative term, like in the current English language, but the good drama was created, you know. Third year, big comeback of Fujinami, that, you know, he was out for a couple, you know, a year or so with his, you know, back injury and everything, and people were talking about, well, was the Fujinami days are over and this, and third year, Fujinami won this G1 Climax tournament in 1993 and established Fujinami again. Like, this, he can still go, you know? And the fourth year, 94, Chono won again. He became Mr. G1 Climax. He had another title, you know? I mean, like your label, which is good. So now it's 29th year of G1 Climax. Every summer, you will have this serious tournament, meaning that all the dream matchups for the summer, you know, the so-and-so against so-and-so, single match, like a single match you don't normally see on regular tour. G1 Climax, they'll give you this dream single match pretty much every night during the tour. So people will have to attend all the shows, you know? Very smart, huh?
For people going to Dallas, to the G1, probably for the first time, what do you think that they can expect on the first night of a G1?
The tournament, you know, it's not a, you know, like a regular tournament. You go, you know, this is round robin tournament. So everybody will wrestle one another, you know, once, you know, like a 10 participants. So everybody having 9 single match during this G1 tour. So it's gotten, you know, like gotten bigger, you know. The first few years, they only got like 6 guys or 8 guys or maybe 10 guys. Now it's like bracket A and bracket B, and you have 10 wrestlers here. You have 10 wrestlers there. 20 wrestlers participating, you know, pretty much every night. And in Dallas, they will give them maybe 4 tournament matches, but it's still single dream matchup, right? And they can still give you tag team situation, 6-man tag team match to introduce more stars, and even 8-man tag team to showcase other superstars, I think. And it will be very good, like, introduction to American live audience. Yeah.
Speaking of G1.
Yeah.
Somebody's in the G1, someone's back who has something to prove, and that person is Kenta.
Yeah.
What has been the reaction to the return of Kenta? Do people see him as a star, or do they see him as a washout who needs to prove himself?
Both. But you know what? Just like I said 5 minutes ago, people are, you know, that are so into Japanese wrestling scene, and especially New Japan World type serious New Japan fans, they don't follow what takes place in WWE ring. They read about it. You know, oh yeah, I know he was Hideo Itami, right? That's the name he used. They didn't use him this well, this and that. And they don't take time to watch all 4 years of what Kenta did in America, you know. So this is like a return of Superstar Kenta in one hand. But for more hardcore fans, yeah, but he didn't do too well in America. He has to prove himself again. That kind of fans are there. But he is back as Kenta, not Hideo Itami. You know what I'm saying? This portion of Hideo Itami history of 4 years, 5 years, 4 years back, yeah, is like something that they can lock it. You know what I'm saying? Put a lock on, you know? And Kenta is in G1 Climax as a pretty much focal point of the tournament this year, I believe. And I'll tell you why. Can I?
I hope you do.
Okay. We don't have to go through everything, but bracket A, 10 wrestlers. I'm going to mention right now that, okay, because we need to. Bracket A is Okada, okay? Okay. Can you take a note a little bit? Well,
Sure.
you know all those, all 10.
What do you want me to do? You want me to write down the names?
Well, so he says we can go back right away.
Okay,
All
okay.
right. 10 wrestlers on bracket A, you know, the block A, Okada, okay?
Right.
Zack Sabre Jr., Tanahashi, Ibushi, Evil, Sanada, Bad News Fale, Lance Archer, and two more, Ospreay and Kenta. And you put Kenta, you circle Kenta, and I went like this. Kenta has single match against Okada. Okay. Kenta against Okada, Kenta against Zack Sabre, Kenta against Tanahashi, Kenta against Ibushi, Kenta against Ospreay. These are all dream matches, don't you think?
Do you think that he could pull off an upset in any of these matches?
Yeah, definitely. He probably will be top or second of this A block. Yeah. I'm assuming Okada or Ibushi will be the number one points on this A block, you know. But Kenta and Ospreay has chance too, you know.
That's what I'm
And
wondering.
you
It's like I think they have to be really careful with Ospreay as well. He needs an impressive performance in this tournament, I think.
Well, they can get by saying that, but he's still junior heavyweight, you know. And also, how's this? See, Ospreay can beat somebody like Okada in a tournament match, but he can still lose for IWGP title match later on in October or something. See, Ibushi, Tanahashi can be losing four matches and win four, you know, five matches or something, you know. So he, but he's still a superstar, you know. Zack Sabre Jr. the same way. He can win, you know, out of nine matches, he can win four and lose five or something. And what's interesting is you will have somebody like Lance Archer as a wild card. Lance Archer can lose every single match, but he can have upset, you know. Lance Archer can beat Okada convincingly. Lance Archer can beat Ospreay very convincingly, you know. Lance Archer can beat Ibushi very convincingly, you know. So he will be the wild card to make the difference, I believe. Does it make sense?
Yeah, I think it makes perfect
Yeah.
sense.
Yeah. So I'm watching this block A as Kenta as a focal point. So like I said, Kenta Okada, you know, very important match. Kenta Tanahashi, ooh, very good match. Kenta against Ibushi, ooh, that's a main event. Kenta against Ospreay, I want to watch it, you know. So these are, if you put Kenta first, then, you know, looking up those lineups, the Kenta is the focal point of this block A, I think. Yeah, so this year is very interesting. And the block B, you know, the 10 wrestlers, you know, A block A had a lot of big names, you know, but just like a lot of people are saying, this block B don't have as many superstars. But I'm gonna go through. Can you write down real quick?
I'm writing him down.
Naito's in there, okay? Ishii's in there. Juice Robinson, Toriano, Hirooki Goto, Jay White, Jeff Cobb for the first time, Shingo Takagi, Taichi, and your John Moxley. And I'll go for John Moxley on this, you know, block B. And I'll tell you why, that the dream card they can provide from this block B is John Moxley against Naito. You want to watch it, you know, that's the main event. John Moxley against Ishii, ooh, it's good for New Japan fans. John Moxley against Jay White, very serious position, you know, status positioning match, you know, who goes over, you know, are they putting Jay White over or Moxley, or John Moxley can beat Jay White and he established that, right, he's on higher, you know, that status than the Jay White. And the Moxley against Jeff Cobb, very interesting. Jeff Cobb against Shingo Takagi can be very interesting. So B Block has pretty interesting lineup too. I go with John Moxley. Therefore, the tournament in the final will be, in my opinion though, Okada against John Moxley or something like that. Or Ibushi against John Moxley. Maybe?
No, I think those are, you make very valid points. What is the reaction right now? Are you hearing anything about Moxley from anyone internally? Or what are your thoughts on, like you mentioned, Moxley and Jay White, where they are on the pecking order, things like that? What are your thoughts
John Moxley,
on Moxley?
I think John Moxley will be very near top. Yes. Because for one thing, he's very committed to New Japan. That he wants to come in every other month or so and have a lot of tours with Japan. And people, even in wrestlers, they were surprised how big of a wrestling fan John Moxley really was. A fan. I mean, as a wrestling fan, as a kid. John Moxley, as a kid, apparently, he had watched all these Japanese wrestling matches on VHS video as a kid. That kind of fan. Well, Seth Rollins was the same way, that the Bray Wyatt the same way. A lot of today's WWE superstars, they were like lifelong wrestling fans. Turned out to be professional wrestler, you know, as a grown up. But John Moxley knew a lot about Japanese wrestling and its history. These people are really impressed, you know, and he's really committed. And John Moxley really told, you know, New Japan office how committed he is on this, his tenure with this company. Yeah. See, Chris Jericho has a special relationship with New Japan, but he is not coming in to do a G1 climax tournament, you know, for three, four weeks period and have 9 single matches. Chris Jericho should have just one match at a time. Very special. You know, every time he has a match, it's special. But John Moxley's career, at this point in life, he can go into G1 Climax tournament and have all the single matches in 3 weeks period. He can still do it. I'm not saying Jericho can't, but the John Moxley is willing to, you know, get more involved with Japanese storyline and all the matchups and whatnot. And he is New Japan bound, I think.
Well, Chris Jericho is also 15 years older or so than John
right.
Moxley. And,
oh, of course, yeah.
And Chris Jericho has nothing to prove.
And then
there's a lot of
each single match is important. Yeah, so it's not for G1, but... Yeah. John Moxley wanted to be in the G1 Climax tournament and have all kinds of single matches against, you know, people he's seen on videotapes, you know. And and he will elevate Juice Robinson too. Just like I said that the AJ Styles can elevate Ricochet to another level, John Moxley and Juice Robinson in this block B, and they will have single match for the second time. And this is Juice Robinson's chance to prove that he can be a star in Japan too. and Jay White against John Moxley, the most interesting matchup, you know, during this block B. And or even what kind of match, you know, John Moxley against Jeff Cobb can have in Japanese ring. Yeah, just play with your idea.
Okay, we need to stop talking about this because now I'm considering coming in August and I don't need to do that.
Really?
I don't.
Yeah, because you're a big Jeff Cobb fan too, you know?
I know.
Also, he's a kind of wrestler who can establish in Japan, you know? He may not look like WWE superstar, but in Japan...
I can't go to Japan. Well, I can, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, but this
I
is exciting,
not...
isn't it? This G1 just... Okay, yeah, when you
stop.
Look, you know, put your name down.
Stop selling it. Stop selling me on it.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited for the first time in years that these single matchups are pretty, very interesting every night, pretty much.
Is that hotel still available?
And they only give you 2 to 3 matches, tournament matches a night, so you have to be watching New Japan World on your laptop pretty much every night just to check those single matches. I want to skip all these 8-man tag team, 6-man tag team matches. I'm sorry, but there are 2 tournament matches pretty much every night. So I just want to check these single matches because every single, you know, tournament match, they will bring your A game, you know, even to prove, you know, against each other. I mean, like for your co-worker wrestlers too, all the wrestlers will bring you the A game. This time of the year. What do you think? You're just really excited?
I think I'm very engaged right now, but I need to stop thinking about it because I should not go back
but you,
to Japan.
Do you have a New Japan
trip.
World?
Yeah.
Okay,
I
you
New
have
Japan
New Japan World.
World.
Yeah, so just check single matches, you know? I'm sorry about skipping those, you know, other 8-man tag team and single match, tag team match, undercard and all those little things, but these single matches are all interesting. And all these things can be main event, you know, any given night, right? And
you're
giving
right.
it away. Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
But that's a G1, yeah.
That is the G1.
We got a lot of ground to cover.
We got a lot of stuff to cover. Antonio Inoki, yeah. Retiring, apparently.
Yeah. We have in Japan, though, we have election coming in mid-July for the House of Representatives, just like your lower house parliament. That Inoki basically announced that he's not running for another term. That would be another 6 years, and he's about 76. And he announced it that he's not the best in health, you know, health-wise, that he's stepping down. And he basically saying that he can't do another 6-year term. And so he is retiring after, you know, yeah, pretty much for the first time, I guess. I mean, for real, you know, he's not running. But he will be doing that other thing, he said. Yeah. So, normal politician. But I don't think he will be involved in any wrestling companies. But he will be your Antonio Inoki. So, I don't know what he will do. Always will be in public eyes, though, huh?
Oh, I thought he was retiring from the public eye as well, is he not?
Well, but if you're Antonio Inoki, much like your... Hulk Hogan or Ric Flair or Vince McMahon, for that matter, that you cannot be just retired old man, you know? Yeah.
Which cat is that?
Yeah, Kiki agreed. Kiki. Yeah, he goes, yeah, that's what I thought too. he wanted to say hi. Yeah, he said hi.
Hi, Kiki.
Amazing, huh? From the cat mirroring from Tokyo, so everybody can share it.
Everybody loves. You need to take a picture and share. Have you shared? You shared Kiki online. Have you shared Kiki?
Not so much. I'll do that. I'll
you
do
should
that.
Tweet out
yeah.
a picture of Kiki and your other cats.
Okay. He kind of looks like a skinny version of Garfield.
Oh, is he orange? He's like an orange tabby.
Yeah, orange tiger. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Very friendly. Yeah.
Let's talk about Yoshiaki Yatsu.
Right, it was really shocking that it was on the news, I mean, not like Yahoo News and other sports pages, that he had to amputate right leg underneath, under your knee, you know, because of serious diabetic. And that announces his retirement, I guess. He retired a couple of times, but he wrestled his last match, probably even last year, you know. And yeah, he had retired a couple times, but came back a couple times. He had match probably even last year, you know. And going through Yoshiaki Yatsu's professional wrestling career, we can talk about the Olympic wrestlers in Japan too. You know, Yoshiaki Yatsu went into 1976 Montreal Olympic, and freestyle, of course. And U.S. and Japan boycotted 1980 Olympic. Remember that, right?
Yes, because of the.
Soviet thing, and we boycotted, and came back with 1984 LA Olympic. So he was going to 1980 Olympic if Japan went, because he was a candidate. But instead, he turned pro 1980 and joined New Japan Pro Wrestling. Yeah. And we'll just briefly, we go through the list of Olympic wrestlers in Japan.
Well, real quick, about Yoshiaki Yatsu. I remember him wrestling in the WWF.
Yes, they were. See, he was like a golden boy from the day one. And he, signed with, Antonio Inoki's, New Japan Pro Wrestling in 1980. And he was immediately sent to New York, WWF at the time. And his mentor coach, Inoki assigned, was Pat Patterson. That the physical is fine, that he can always wrestle, and he's big enough, and he's good enough to debut right away. But it was wrestling business and the wrestling psychology and how this wrestling, professional wrestling works. It was Pat Patterson who was a mentor coach to Yoshiaki Yatsu. And I don't know of anyone else, but Yatsu was the only wrestler who actually debuted at the Madison Square Garden. First professional match, it was December of 1980 at Madison Square Garden against Carlos Jose Estrada. Useless trivia, Estrada was the guy who put Fujinami over for WWF Junior Heavyweight title back in 1978, same guy. But Estrada was one of the, Estrada's son then, was one of those, Attitude Era, you have Savio Vega, you have Miguel Press, you have that...
Los Boricuas.
Four Puerto Rican guys, right?
Yeah.
This whole Estrada was father of one of them. Anyhow, Yoshiaki Yatsu debuted at Madison Square Garden in December 29th of 1980, then worked, around the horn, worked WWE another 6-7 months, and came back to Japan in June of 1981. And the first match back and debuting in Japan, he was already main event. Okay? Inoki and Yoshiaki Yatsu against Stan Hansen and Abdullah the Butcher. Ooh, that's a big main event, don't you think?
I also remember Yatsu being in World Class.
Right after that, so this 1981 Japan run, he wasn't quite established. So he was sent back to Dallas and Florida this time. And he was being coached by Hiro Matsuda in Florida. He was also sent to Dallas World Class. And his name was Tora Yatsu. Tora Yatsu. Tora's name came from that... if you remember 1981, samurai, Japanese drama Shogun, there was a book first.
Yeah, the book, and then there was a miniseries.
Miniseries, yeah. And the Shogun was Toranaga. So they took the Tora part. Tora means tiger. Tora Yatsu. And they worked WCCW World Class Championship Wrestling 1982 and 1983. Interestingly enough, that the Tora Yatsu, New Japan's Tora Yatsu, worked against then All Japan's Great Kabuki, two Japanese wrestlers feuding in America, in Dallas, and actually beat Kabuki for world-class television title in 83, I believe. Yeah. Then went back to Japan, this time as Riki Choshu's Ishingun faction. Riki Choshu, Yoshiaki Yatsu, and sometimes Masa Saito comes back from America, Killer Khan, Kuniaki Kobayashi, Animal Hamaguchi, you know, real strong faction. You know, like much like your today's, not today's, but like heel Bullet Club, or, you know, faction was always strong. And Ricky Choshu's heel faction was the one that established the trend, you know. And clearly, Yoshiaki Yatsu was number two guy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And also that whole Ricky Choshu's crew, you know, all together, 13 of them, migrated to Jan Baba's All Japan Pro Wrestling in December of 1984, then worked All Japan 85 and 86 for 2 years straight. All the Ricky Choshu's guys, so that Ricky Choshu, Yatsu against All Japan's Jumbo Tsuru and Tenryu at the time, all these dream match up, you know, became, you know, reality, and worked 2 years. Then spring of 1987, Riki Choshu took his guys and went back to New Japan, and Yatsu was one of the few guys that wanted to stay with All Japan, and so he stayed with All Japan. That was the end of his run with New, you know, Riki Choshu. But Yoshiaki Yatsu cut his hair and shaved his, you know, beard, and put short trunks, and became tag team partner of Jumbo Tsurura, Olympics guy, you know. Jumbo Tsurura was 1972 Munich Olympic guy, and Yatsu was 1976 Montreal Olympic guy, and became babyface tag team, and went against people like Tenryu and Ashura Hara, or, you know, the Tenryu against Stan, or Stan and Kawada together, all these, you know, existing team, Jumbo, Tsuruta, and Yoshiaki Yatsu became the pretty much top babyface in All Japan side. So I guess it was Yatsu's thing was being number two guy, huh, I guess. But he did switch from All Japan to SWS, the short-lived SWS was the Super World Sports, where Tenryu was top guy, and the big company sponsorship, and they started new big wrestling company, but went down, you know, in 2 years, 3 years. But it was Yatsu who was also number two underneath Tenryu in that company. And well, then he bounced around different company since then.
Has he had a history of diabetes?
He didn't tell people about it, you know, and just like I said, he bounced off, you know, around different companies, you know, he went back to New Japan a little bit, he worked 01 a little bit, he went back to Old Japan again, and then formed a new company called SPWF, and short-lived, and when Riki Choshu left New Japan in 2003 to form Double J, if you remember, World Japan, Double J Pro Wrestling, Yatsu joined, not just as a wrestler, but as a promoter. You know, he was, you know, selling shows to other, you know, local promoter around the country, and he was able to do so. And he became pretty much promoter after 2000. Yeah. He wrestles as late as 2015, though. Yeah.
Wow.
And also, yeah, I can't forget this. Year 2000, he had two serious MMA match twice. When Pride was around, he had two MMA match against Gary Goodrich. That's a big name, isn't it?
Yeah, I would say so. I forgot about that.
Yeah, Gary Goodrich against, you know, Yoshiaki Yatsu, real early Pride MMA match, you know. Then people liked it. It was like washed up pro wrestler going into MMA, and just like, washed up is a bad way to say it, but, you know, like an aged, middle-aged, you know, former star professional wrestler went into MMA ring to prove something to himself, prove something to his family, prove something to his wrestling fan. And of course, he lost, you know, both times, but the people really liked him, you know, that night. You know, just touching something. I mean, in deep, you know, like deep down, everybody knew he wasn't going to be able to, you know, win, but he tried something, you know, and then he lost, and losing was fine, you know, but people respected, you know, what he did. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so it was his highlight then, you know, late highlight. Yeah, there was a Ricky Cho, the tag team is Ricky Choshu, and the tag team championship was Jumbo Tsurura, fine, and different companies in different era, different things. Oh, Olympic, of course, and Madison Square Garden thing. Tag team was Inoki went against Stan Hansen, Abdullah the Butcher in his debut match in Japan. That's great. But yeah, he had good career then, but always kind of number two guy, huh?
Yeah, but I mean, I think he was pretty well slotted. I mean,
Yeah.
I
Oh, and then another useless trivia I have to, you know, yeah. He was the very first Japanese wrestler who introduced the move Power Slam in Japan. He used that as a finish, and they used to call it Wonder Suplex. It's a, your Power Slam, you know, Buzz Sawyer, you know, your.
Road Warrior Animal.
Yeah, or Dustin Rhodes or Randy Orton or a few people do it, right? Yeah, but Yatsu was after, okay, Kensuke Sasaki used it after that, but when Yatsu used the Power Slam, it was called Wonder Suplex, as if it was something new, you know? And he used that as a finish, and he was the first wrestler to use that as a finish in Japan. Maybe useless trivia, but yeah.
Wonder Suplex is a great name. Well,
If
we should also talk about, we've mentioned him a few times now
yeah.
with Yatsu and Inoki and the G1, but Riki Choshu officially retired
Yeah.
again.
May I have one more useless trivia?
You could have all the useless trivia you want.
Useless trivia about Yoshiaki Yatsu, because it's not on New Japan, New Japan World, you know, streaming service, but somebody has, not just somebody, but a lot of people has this video in a VHS videotape. Yoshiaki Yatsu's actually best single match is Yatsu against Nobuhiko Takada single match. You know, New Japan, you know, Seikigun against Riki Choshu's, you know, Ishin-gun feud, 4 against 4, 5 against 5. They had that in like in 82, 83, right? 84. Yatsu against young Nobuhiko Takada, later on UWFI King, right?
Right.
Young Takada against relatively young Yatsu's single match. Yatsu beat Takada with Power Slam, Wonder Suplex, single match. That is very, very, very good match. Somebody has to watch it, you know. It's not on New Japan, the streaming service, New Japan World, but it might be on, you can find it on YouTube, you know, and it's a real good match. Go out of your way and watch it, is my advice. Okay, my useless trivia is done.
I think you've given us a lot of news we can use, a lot of useful stuff.
And Riki Choshu actually retiring. Yeah, for real. Yeah. And yeah, because he's 67, you know, and he still look like, you know, like a little heavier version of Riki Choshu. He still have semi long hair. He still does the clothesline, you know, and it actually was a sad day that he could almost just step down without saying it, you know, but I guess he, you know, he wanted to have a retiring, you know, this there was no Tengan salute, nothing. He just had a mic and called his wife, and his wife was not so dressed, t-shirt and denim. He came into ring and just gave each other big hug, you know, maybe for the first time in public, you know, because Riki Choshu isn't the type of wrestler who put his wife on the magazine and stuff like that, you know. And she was always, her name is Eiko, and she was almost always invisible. He was never on magazine, never on television. People just knew they were married. And in fact, I don't know if it's the news, it's news out there. They were divorced once and they got married again. Same person, you know, twice, you know. People do that, right, sometimes.
Yeah, that happens.
Yeah.
I noticed that he went out on his back. He went out to the big knee drop, the King Kong knee drop by...
Four of them. Four consecutive King Kong knee drop of Makabe. Makabe insisted he wanted to do it, you know? And also, Riki Choshu isn't the type of wrestler to win the match and retire. You know, for the sake of business, old guys retire, he should be beat, right? Yeah. And who he should be beat, you know, by? His old protege, Makabe. Huh? See, Makabe was carrying Choshu's, you know, bag, suitcases for years when he was a young boy. So he was designated hitter that he will, you know, give Choshu his signature King Kong knee drop off the top rope. And four times, it was interesting. One knee drop would do it, right? But the Riki Choshu, first knee drop, he kicked out the count of one, you know? Then the second big knee drop off the top rope, he kicked out at the count of two. And gave third one, he kicked out at the 2.999. Then the fourth King Kong knee drop, he laid. I mean, like he laid, just laid there and didn't, you know, get up. And it was very convincing finish, even as a retirement match. You know what I mean? He had like, still had this wrestler's image, not an old guy who could barely walk, you know? He had decent match, you know? And he couldn't get up. And put Makabe strong too, you know? He put over, yeah. Makabe was like, still today's guy, right?
You know, there were other people, but Makabe was probably the best choice, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. Then people know the back story. You know, yeah, Makabe, when he was, you know, young lion in the new face, you know, he was carrying, you know, Riki Choshu's suitcase, you know, during the tour. So the good story, you know, stories there. Yeah.
What do you think? So where do you rank Riki Choshu? Obviously, we've talked about...
I mean, Japanese wrestling history?
Yeah, obviously.
Top 10 for sure.
Riki Doze at number one. Baba Inoki tied at number two.
Yeah. Then you have Riki Choshu and Jumbo Tsurura and Fujinami and Tenryu, Maeda, Muto, you know, all those. Or even I put Onita as a very important figure.
Yeah,
too.
You put Onita in your top 10.
Riki Choshu is among there, top there, yeah. Would you right underneath him... Baba Inoki.
So you put him top five.
Yeah, but you just said Inoki and Baba tied in second, right?
Right.
Then you have to have Choshu, Fujinami, Jumbo, and Tenryu. These four are tied in third.
That's a bit much.
You know, it's a pyramid, you know?
That's a bit much. I understand the politics.
Yeah, it's the generation
Inoki
I'm talking
and Baba
about.
Baba have to be tied. Inoki and Baba
second.
Is a different... Yeah, they have to be tied at number two. That's politics.
Then who was right underneath? I mean, generation and the age group. See, Inoki's two direct protege, only Fujinami and Choshu, okay? And Jan Baba's, not, you know, two of the top protege, Jumbo and Tenryu. So these four have to be tied as third. That's hard, huh?
So what do you think Riki Choshu will be most known for? His booking, his in-ring, what do you think?
Riki Choshu is Riki Choshu. Yeah, he's famous, you know? And maybe very first long hair superstar in Japanese wrestling. And maybe one of the very first Japanese heels, you know? I mean, as a superstar. Well, you had people like Umanosuke Ueda or Masa Saito or maybe Rasha Kimura, but like real local native Japanese heel. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like who created faction and went against Fujinami, went against Inoki, always challenging the company, always challenging the establishment. Move his, you know, faction to All Japan and challenged Baba, that never took place, but challenged Jumbo, challenged Tenryu, at the time Babyface. And he was always like an anti-establishment, you know, like, always a four, you know, four, you know, like your top Babyface. people secretly admire heels, right? I mean, wrestling fans.
Right.
Yeah. Then you have your Choshu. Yeah. He was always challenging the power or the company or establishment or authority figure. Or then he ended up being a booker. So that was interesting, you know. But it was also very interesting. When Inoki left New Japan for the first time in 1990, you would think Inoki would give this booker position to Fujinami, naturally, don't you think?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, but instead, Inoki chose Riki Choshu to be the locker room, you know, backstage boss instead of Fujinami. And Inoki kind of knew that with his, you know, like a college jock, you know, Olympic team and always like athletic jock. Yeah, like I said twice, but this, it's mentality that he can always have everybody agree to him in the dressing room. Like he can act like your ace quarterback in the dressing room. Everybody will listen to you, you know? If it's Fujinami, you know, like people like Muto and Chono say, yeah, I have a different opinion, right? Under Riki Choshu, you know, everybody in the locker room will probably say, well, if Riki Choshu says that, I'll do it. You know, then Riki Choshu promised that the program will be there in 6 months from now, that there's going to be my turn. Then he promised it, and he always, you know, kept the promise, you know? It was like, okay. Riki Choshu was like a locker room leader, you know? And I guess Fujinami is a more individual and his own artist, and he was more like a loner, you know? But Riki Choshu always has his whole locker room team, always eat out with everybody, always drink out with everybody. You know, how many pictures you've seen in the magazine that Riki Choshu and his bunch doing party at the Japanese ballroom? You know what I'm saying? It was like a total jock. I mean, he's like a fraternity kind of guy, like a college football player living in a big house, you know, sci-fi house or whatever, you know. You see the image of it?
Right. No, yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah. So Riki Choshu was a good boss, I think. Yeah. And always had his own faction. How many people he made stars, you know? Yeah. So Riki Choshu's era is over now, you know? And yeah. Now he's stepping down and his mic was really good. Thank you very much. I'm going home, is what he said. You know? Right, he was away from his home, wife and, you know, daughter, you know, and he's going home, I guess. You know what? What's interesting is, though, at the end, when he retired last week, he was not technically with New Japan, was he?
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, but he lives in Setagaya. It's like a walking distance from New Japan Dojo. He walks to Dojo like every other day. It just go into dojo and use bike, and he just works out and, you know, and then take shower and go. It's like nobody say a thing about it, but Riki Choshu, even to this date, he goes to New Japan Dojo, you know, like three or four times a week, and run into people like Tanahashi, run into people like Yuji Nagata, and say, talk. And it's like, yeah, why don't you have lunch here? And he walks in and just eat and leaves, just like he did 30 years ago. It's interesting. He doesn't even work for New Japan, but he still goes to New Japan and use dojo as his gym.
Is he just a cheap wrestler?
Not just that, but this is what he used to work out when he was 25, 30. Right. And he still lives in his, you know, condominiums, like almost walking distance from his house. He comes in and use dojo as his gym and talk to young boys. And most guys want to talk to him.
Well, of course, yeah, he's Riki freaking Choshu.
Yeah, Riki Choshu's in the dojo. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And it's like, yeah, I want to sit down and talk to him. And yeah, he still goes there, even now. Not just being cheap, though, but it's, again, his almost college jock mentality. Yeah.
Right. And it's a routine.
Yeah. He's still, wants to work out and sweat and take hot shower and eat late lunch. Good life, huh?
Well, and I also think it's cool that, you know, he's very unassuming about it and tries to be just humble and, you know, unobtrusive about it. And at the same time, New Japan allows it. I guess if the company wanted to be a jerk, it
I
could.
mean, yeah, if Ricky Choshu shows up at the dojo and wants to work out, and he just already has his sweats on and t-shirt, and he has his towel in his hand, would you say don't come in?
Right. It's a win-win for everybody.
Yeah, and then he eats there too, you know. And this 66, you know, 67-year-old Ricky Choshu is awful friendly now, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, that's a win-win, like you said. Yeah, so this is like a friendship is there, you know, I think.
You should try that. Maybe get some free meals, some free workouts.
No, it has to be wrestling.
Oh,
Yeah.
okay. They wouldn't let you in even though you're Fumi?
New Japan has a rule, strict rule. It is that they are telling all the young lions, don't let anybody in your dojo, you know, and then you'll
Yeah.
be punished.
Yeah, no, I'm. It is very. That's one thing we are joking about it, but yeah, it is very. It's a very strict environment. Speaking of that, the Stardom documentary that was on Viceland, I thought that was kind of interesting the way they showed the daily workout routine.
Yeah, practice and it's actually 2-year-old, you know, footage, you know.
Right.
So Tony Storm and other, you know, that now NXT bound, you know, superstars, they were there, you know.
Right.
Yeah, or even a few wrestlers that are already retired in the meantime,
Yeah, like
they were
Chris
there in the
Wolf.
footage.
Yeah, Chris
yeah
Wolf.
yeah yeah but yeah, so Chris Wolf had a lot to say about how it, you know, how it's like to be a foreigner and be a wrestler, or how, you know, how it doesn't matter how many years she's been, like, she didn't think she was accepted, you know, or yeah, a lot of interesting, you know, quote in there. Yeah.
From your perspective.
Yeah.
Not necessarily, you know, getting in her business, whether or not she's accepted, but is there validity to that? I mean, if somebody comes in who obeys all the rules and does their best and is working hard and doing all the things that one needs
Yeah,
to
well,
do,
not just wrestling, but
can
I
one fit
think Chris
in?
Wolf was talking about Japanese society in general, that she felt that it doesn't matter how many years, you know, she's been here and even speak Japanese language and everything, that she did not think she will be accepted, that, you know, like people expect you to leave at some point or something. And it was like, yeah, you know, well, I'll tell you the truth, that I'll dig into my personal life, that I was married to an American when I was 25, 26, 27, you know, back in the 80s, you know,
Right, yes.
that she came to Japan, we met, we got married, and she was an aerobic instructor. How 80s, right? And yeah, there was a similar reason that she did not think she would be completely accepted, that it's like I don't belong or something, and she, that was a part of the reason she left, you know. So some people feel that way sometimes, you know. See, America is a country of immigration, you know, is how this country started, you know. New land, new world, from Europe, all over the world, you know, they came to America and you build a country 250 years ago. And whereas, I don't know, see, a lot of Japanese people think they're all homogeneous or something. It's like they don't look Japanese, or if you are a foreigner, you always look like foreigner. And just there's a very deep subject, you know, this is an issue there that everybody experience in a certain way, you know. God, we can spend the whole episode on that, you know.
Well, we'll have to do
Yeah,
that
but
sometime. It's
the
very
documentary
nuanced.
itself was very truthful and very interesting.
I was.
Although it was 2 years, you know, 2-year-old, you know, footage, you know, not so current. So some of the things were not necessarily relevant.
There's a couple of things. One, I was
Yeah.
surprised about how blunt Rossi Ogawa was about
About
certain.
talents?
But yes.
Yeah. Because, see, I asked Rossi about that too. See, when, okay, women's wrestling, even not just 30 years ago, but let's say 20 years ago and 15 years ago, that wrestlers had longer career, you know. But if you look at Stardom 7-year history, there was a 70 over 70 wrestlers who came and left, you know. Today's women's wrestlers, you know, lifespan, career span is a lot shorter than your, let's say, Manami Toyota era or Kyoko Inoue era or your Bo Nakano era. They had this all, they all had 20, 25 years. Some people had 30 year career. Or people like Kyoko Inoue still works. People like Aja Kong still works in the ring, right? But for today's wrestling, how Rossi looks at it, at the Stardom, yeah, these superstars will be superstar probably 5 year period, and they'll find something else and leaves. And she, Rossi almost expect that. See, at the very beginning of Stardom, you know, Yuzupon was the superstar, but she only had 2 year run. You know that, you know, Bito or you know these girls, Fuka, they had rather shorter career than the women's wrestler from 80s and 90s. And Rossi expect that. And very symbolically that this last weekend, you know, Stardom show, the girls I just mentioned, you know, Bito and Fuka and the Yuzupon, they all showed up backstage with they're holding their babies, you know? Oh my gosh, you know? Because they were star 2 years ago. And now they're married and now they have babies. You know what I mean? Just, not just getting pregnant, but they already gave birth and carrying baby and being young mom. And they brought their babies to dressing room. Oh, wow. You know, this is a little bit different. You know what I mean? You know what I'm saying? You'll see the life, photos.
Life goes on.
Yeah. See, Bo Nakano days or the Crush Girls days, Aja Kong era, they were wrestlers forever, you know? And Bo Nakano, Akira Hokuto had problem with that. They thought they could do a lot more. Then they left and saw the world, got married, and, you know, became TV, you know, that huge superstars. And they have, you know, married and have family, and they were able to have everything they wanted, you know. But they were the exceptions, you know. There are other wrestlers who worked 25 years, and this is the only thing they want to do, and the only thing they could do. There's nothing wrong with that. But for Stardom's, Rossi's philosophy in 2019, you know, kind of thing, that maybe, just maybe, women's wrestlers have shorter lifespan and career span, much like divas. Does that make sense?
I think it does make sense. Other thing I want to talk to you about,
yeah,
is the male fan base. They talked about
they're all male. Yeah.
Now, I don't want to be naive.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there are some male fans who go there because there are pretty women doing athletic moves in various forms of outfits. That said, I think there's just a lot of the impression that I got, and when you mentioned when we were there in January, you mentioned all the male fans. I think a lot of them are just wrestling fans.
Yeah, but their stars are Stardom stars.
Yes.
Yeah. And they probably were not necessarily Manami Toyota fans, you know. They were wrestling fans, but that their ideal female superstars they would find in Stardom. That the kind of star they were always looking for, you know. Yeah. Yeah, wrestling fans, though, of course. Of course, wrestling fans, but that's also their ideal female superstars.
Yeah, you know, I guess what I'm saying is, yeah, there probably are some fans who are physically and attracted to some of the women, but...
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I can see that. Yeah.
Right, I think there are some. I think it's naive to say that they're not, but I don't think that the vast majority of them are like that. At least that was my perception looking around.
Yeah, of course, wrestling fan.
Yeah.
Of course, wrestling fan, but they are still looking at them as female, too.
Well, yeah, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't think it's just there as titillation.
Well, if you want to have bikini, you know, you can just go see other, you know, teen idol pop singers or dancing, you know, shows or something. There are plenty out there.
Right, exactly.
These are wrestlers.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. No, I think it's less sinister than it was portrayed in the documentary.
In American eyes.
Yes.
Director's perspective.
Correct.
Yeah. 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 I can see that. I know exactly what you're saying, but that's the motivation they wanted to do the documentary in the first place.
Well, I'm not saying that there's not some guys in the audience like there. There are probably some. But I don't think it's the majority by a long shot. I mean, we were out in the
but
parking
the
lot.
Director seen... of this film had this kind of perception to begin with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, and even in the United States now, I mean, I've seen a handful of Stardom shows now, and I mean they do amazing merch. They do incredible merch lines. But I don't think the majority are like that by far. So
I mean then use the word pervert.
Yeah,
they're not pervert.
Well,
they're
perverts
fans.
Everywhere, but and I'm sure there are. I mean, there's some everywhere, but I don't think.
No, they're
the
wrestling fans, straight wrestling fans.
Exactly.
Yeah,
I don't think
yet
the
at the same time, Hana Kimura is your superstar.
Yes.
You know, yeah, not just wrestlers, but everything about her.
Correct.
You know? So it's yeah. So everything included too, pretty much.
So. Well, look, we have covered a lot. This has been a great show. I think you did awesome today.
Really?
Not
okay,
that you don't do
good.
Awesome every day, but today was like super awesome. You hit it out of
we
two
covered
baseball parks.
Two baseball parks.
Yes.
WWE Japan Tour. We had Inoki. We had Choshu. We had Yatsu. We had G1 Climax. We even had women's wrestling and Stardom in the documentary and the whole bit.
We did a good lot enough? Today. So... we'll do questions next time. So people, where can they
yes,
follow?
Please.
We'll do hashtag, #AskFumi when you ask
yeah,
the questions
find.
On Twitter. And where can they find you at?
Fumihiko Dayo, FumihikoDayo on Twitter. Or you can just find me on Fumi Saito. But when you put your friend request, if you message me, it's a lot easier to accept your friend request. Send me... you know, messenger messages first.
Like, hey, I'm a big fan of the show, something like that.
Not just that, but this is you see it out of friend requests. It's like, do I even know this person?
Correct.
Do I even know? Yeah, it's like, and then I don't want to be an asshole about it.
Exactly.
Excuse my language.
You're not. No, you're not.
Yeah.
Fan.
Yeah, so a messenger message preferred.
Yeah, there we go. You can follow me on Twitter at Jim Valley. So be sure to do that and have questions next time for #AskFumi. And until next time.
So long from Tokyo. Thank you.